Hello, this is Alan. Good afternoon. Time's 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Rock Spot for this Monday, June 10th. I'm Alan. Support for the Medical Monday comes from TriCor Anesthesia Group, a certified registered nurse anesthesiologist company providing anesthesia services for New York State. 518-598-2042 for details. Joining us today is Dr. Joseph Schwartz, board-certified dermatologist with his own practice in Troy and Clifton Park, New York. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Schwartz, the dermatologist, and your skincare calls all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live call-in afternoon talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us to discuss skincare and treatment is Dr. Joseph Schwartz. Dr. Schwartz is board-certified dermatologist in Troy and Clifton Park, where he practices both medical and cosmetic dermatology. Dr. Schwartz earned his medical degree at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. He completed his internship and residency in internal medicine at Mount Sinai Medical Center. He also completed a fellowship in skin cancer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Joseph Schwartz, Joe Schwartz, welcome back to Medical Monday.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, we always love it when you're here. To be part of today's conversation, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I don't have to tell you, this is going to be a very, very busy program, and you're going to want to make a call now. We try to get to everybody. We go as fast as we can, and don't be annoyed if we move along, you know, quickly. You can always email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So, Dr. Schwartz, I have a question. I was thinking about it as I knew you were coming on today. We're hearing a lot about climate change, right, and all the rest. Are we finding that because things may be getting a little bit warmer, there's a difference in the rate of skin cancers?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think you could. I think when you consider skin cancer, you have to look at the cause, and ultraviolet rays are the number one, so the sunlight that hits our skin. And I don't think that has much to do with climate change. If anything, if the atmosphere is polluted and smog, you might actually block some ultraviolet rays. So I think that's one thing we can't blame on climate change is skin cancer. There are other effects, certainly. One thing we can just talk about locally is with all the rain we've had. Certainly there's been tons of mosquitoes, black flies, and things like that out there.
Yep.
So it certainly affects the insects and things that can bite us and attack us. You know, you hear about things like these very aggressive bees that come up from south up to north in places where they normally wouldn't because they would have hard freezes in the winter, and all of a sudden people are getting attacked by these aggressive bees. So certainly climate change does have effects in the field of dermatology, but I don't think so much with the skin cancer problem.
Okay. Jim from Matamoros. Okay, Jim, let's have it. What do you got?
What other diseases other than psoriasis are likely to produce plaque-like lesions on the skin?
Oh, plaques. Okay. Well, a plaque, just to explain, is a raised lesion on the skin. So in dermatology, we describe things. We have sort of special terminology. So something that's flat, if you rub your hand over it and it feels flat, that would be called a patch. If it's a small patch, it would be a macule. If it's a little raised bump, it's a papule, and if it's a larger area, we call it a plaque. So the most common disease with plaques is plaque psoriasis. The name is right there in it. And those are characterized by, tend to be thick scales with a white silvery, thick plaques with a white silvery scale, and most commonly on places like the back of the scalp, elbows, knees, although it can affect any part of the body. But any condition that is this, where the skin gets thickened or rubbed will cause a plaque. So the other most common thing is just dermatitis that's rubbed. That will form plaques on the skin. So basically, the plaque is just an area of raised skin and typically is often itchy, but not necessarily so.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, let's go to Linda in Corinth, but not before I give the number, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Linda in Corinth, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm calling to ask a question about the brown spots we all get when we turn a certain age on our skin. And I have one on my face and it's freaking me out.
Okay.
Is there anything to get rid of those? Somebody told me that Retin-A got rid of the brown spots.
Okay. Well, of course, I'm not able to see you, and we certainly can't make diagnoses over the air. But we'll talk in general terms and try to make some sense about this. So one thing that you mentioned when you said brown spot was you also said age. We need to separate the age from the brown spots. If we're talking about brown spots from the sun, there's a lot of people like to blame these things on age. But a lot of the brown spots we see on the skin are in sun-exposed areas and are really sunspots. They're not liver spots. They're not age spots. But they are sunspots. And they do indicate areas of sun damage. The common brown freckles or lentigos are benign, so they are nothing to worry about. But you can also get brown spots that are melanomas, and this can be a very serious cancer. So okay. What I like to tell people when they think that, oh, they're just age spots is, I think I mentioned this last time I was here, is if you look at the skin on the inner side of your upper arm, where there's very little sun exposure, you'll see pretty much white skin. If you look on the forearms, you'll see the areas that have a lot more sun damage, and you'll see a lot of brown and blotchy skin. That is not that skin does have natural, there's changes with age, but the vast majority of the damage we see to the skin is from sun exposure and ultraviolet light. So it's not just you can be quite old and have beautiful skin if you take good care of it. If you were, we could talk more about this as we probably will. But if you're doing good sun protection, if you have good habits of wearing hats and sun protective clothing, using appropriate sunscreens, you can keep your skin looking young and avoid a lot of the brown and blotchy changes that one will see with sun damage.
Does Retin-A help at all?
So Retin-A, which is a brand name, but tretinoin is the generic name, can help with solar freckles, with lentigines. And again, it is a prescription, so you need to talk to your doctor about whether that would be something for you. But it is a medication that can reverse some of the changes associated with sun damage, including fine lines and also some of the brown spots. So yes, that is a useful medication.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Very much.
Okay. The telephone number here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll go to Gail in Oneonta. Okay, Gail, you're on. Are you there, Gail? Uh-oh. Gail, are you there? No. What happened? Okay, here we go. Gail and Oneonta. Yeah, well, now we're here, Gail. Go ahead.
Okay, I have what they call mucus cyst on my thumb. And it looks like those little bumps that they say are related to arthritis.
Okay.
Is it the same thing? And the other question is, when you get a sunburn, is it okay to leave the lotion off?
Okay. So two questions. One is about a specific...
It feels like it makes it too hot.
Oh, okay. Well, a digital mucus cyst is a bump that occurs around the ends of the fingers, usually either around the distal knuckle or near the cuticle, the proximal nail fold. And these are bumps often associated with arthritis, so you may have other bumps on the fingers too. And what happens is the cyst, it's not a true cyst,
okay,
but it's a collection of mucin, which is the material that lubricates and lines the joints. So you actually, people who have this, when they leak, you get a clear viscous material that gets extruded from the very interesting cysts. Some of these may be connected to the joint space, which is where the fluid is leaking from. And you can see that with joint damage from arthritis. Again, these typically do occur in older folks with osteoarthritis. They're not anything dangerous, although I guess it could get infected, and they can be painful and tender. But the thing that brings them mostly to my attention is people come in and they have an indentation in their fingernail because of the pressure from the cyst, and they'll have a ridge that's a vertical ridge on their nail, and they'll wonder what it's from.
Ridge.
Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So,
okay. And what about the sunburn? I got sunburn on my legs.
Uh-huh. Well, as far as wrapping things up... These cysts can be removed if they're closer to the cuticle area. Sometimes they're more localized and not attached to the joint. They can be just frozen off like a wart, and sometimes that will take care of it. But if they are attached to the joint, usually you want to see a hand surgeon to remove the cyst and any connection there may be to the joint space. As far as sunburn, if you have a sunburn, you should not be really getting your skin exposed to the sun. You should cover up. That skin is even more sensitive. Particularly after it peels, you're going to have very little protection. Your skin is very vulnerable, and you'll just get a greater insult. If it's on your face or a place where you can't cover it easily, I would use a sunscreen that's very gentle, like one with zinc oxide, which is what you would use for like a baby diaper cream. That type of material is very safe. And I would use something like that to coat the area and protect it until it heals. And
does
be careful all season. Excuse me?
Does it feel hot?
If it feels hot, should I put lotion on it or let it cool off before I put lotion on it?
Well, if you have acute sunburn, the symptom is heat sometimes because you get a lot of vasodilation. You get a lot of blood flow to the area. If you have acute sunburn, you have to really baby the skin. You can use cold compresses, use moisturizers, but you don't want to put anything on the skin that is going to irritate it or make it burn. You should avoid that. That's why I would stick more to the type of sunscreen that's chemical-free. Those are the zinc or titanium products, and those would be the best.
Gail, gotta go, Gail. Sorry.
Thanks, Gail.
Thank you.
Okay, the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now listen, folks, we're going to go take a short couple-second break, and we'll be right back. And the first person we're going to talk to is Krista. But you can call and get on the radio, 1-800-348-2551. Well, that was great, and thank you for that. And let's go to Krista in the Catskills to talk to Dr. Schwartz. Okay, Krista, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. I was diagnosed a few years ago. I had like an itchy rash all over my legs. I went to the dermatologist. She just looked at it. She said, "That's folliculitis. You just can't ever shave again."
Joe, what's it? Radiculitis?
Folliculitis.
Folliculitis. Okay. Go ahead.
So they.
I'm wondering how you would get it all over. Like, I literally have it all over my legs anytime I shave, sometimes for no reason.
I can't get into a specific diagnosis, but when did this all start with for you now? Was it a sudden thing?
It was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sudden thing.
Mm-hmm. So folliculitis,
out of nowhere.
What it really means is just inflammation of the hair follicle. So to break it down, there's sort of two main sort of groups, infectious and non-infectious. So one thing that can happen acutely is a bacterial folliculitis, which is often staph infection. And that is quite common, where if you do shave, you have staph on your skin, you can actually inoculate yourself and you get a lot of these little infections. So look like little pimples or pustules, little pus bumps on the legs. And that's usually treated pretty easily with a topical or oral antibiotic. And one thing we see, another type of folliculitis, which is interesting, is the hot tub folliculitis. Which you can get if there's another type of bacteria called Pseudomonas in the hot tub, which it kind of likes that warm water. It's that there's not enough chlorine or bromine in it. So again, that's another type of folliculitis. But you can also get folliculitis that is not infectious or bacterial or other infections. You can get a sort of more of an acne type of reaction. And actually, acne is a type of folliculitis. So you get on the face. It's a special type of folliculitis. We call it acne because it affects the sebaceous follicles on the face and the back and shoulders. So there's actually a lot to folliculitis. Most people who get it, there are treatments for it. Most women are able to shave again. You may have to change your technique. But if you're not getting help you need, you know, I would definitely seek out some other doctor, because most women are able to shave again if their folliculitis is properly treated. But again, you'll have to get a good evaluation and see what the actual cause is.
So what's the technique change for a woman who's shaving her legs?
So first of all, you want to make sure that you're using a good sharp razor. You don't want to be – sometimes men, too, you know, they'll use a razor till you can, you know –
yeah,
it gets very dull. And also, if the razor is can get contaminated, you want to make sure that you're getting disposing of a contaminated blade. But the key for shaving, includes men and women, is to try to really hydrate the skin. It softens the hairs and allows you to shave and cut the hairs with less pressure. So if you shave after showering or putting a warm washcloth on your
face.
How about
during showering?
Women do that. It's not a bad thing for women because they can shave their legs. They can see what they're doing. It's hard for men, I think, you know, with just to sort of see what you're doing.
I don't think so. I've been doing it for 40 years.
So yeah. If you have your technique down, if you're not getting too foggy, it is a really you can tell me, right, how nice it is, right? Get a nice soft shave.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
because
what
you're hydrating the skin.
Yeah, yep. When I belonged to the Stu Ben Club back in the day, a long time ago, they forbid it because it was getting into the drains.
Wow, hair in the drains, huh?
See what you know now?
Wow.
You didn't know.
I'm sorry I asked.
Krista, thank you for the call. Yeah. Appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay, and now we're going over to Jean in Malta.
Hello, Jean.
Hi. I have a question about going to the tanning booth, which I know is not good. I do know that. But my question is it worse, say you were going to spend the day in the sun or go and spend 10 minutes to get some color? Just curious about what the damage difference is and what your thoughts are about that.
Okay. That's actually an interesting question. And I can't probably give you the answer that you want.
I know.
I guess what you're asking is it safer to get color through a tanning booth or through natural sunlight? And the answer would be, there may be an answer to that. I'm not really sure what that is. But there are differences between artificial tanning and natural sunlight. The color you get in a tanning booth is often not as protective as a natural tan. I'm not exactly sure why, but it doesn't give you that same sun protection as a natural tan.
I know a politician around here. It looked pretty impressive.
So in general, as I mentioned before, any ultraviolet exposure is going to cause sun damage. And the act of tanning is indicative of damage to the cellular damage, actually, and actually breakage of DNA, and the repair process stimulates melanin, so stimulates the pigmentation in the skin. So the fact that you get a tan means there is actually the ultraviolet light is damaging your skin. So there's really, that's why you kind of hear the expression, there's no safe tan. Now, that being said, it really depends a lot on your skin type. There are people who have darker complexions who can certainly be fine with some sun and they'll get some color and it's not really dangerous. There are people like myself who are very fair and cannot tolerate sun, and there's really no safe sun exposure. So again, I don't want to generalize to everybody. And you know, people who have very dark skin really aren't, they don't have risks of skin cancer.
Are people of color have less risk of skin cancer?
Absolutely. It's very rare for people with dark skin to get skin cancer, except for there's a few exceptions. People with dark skin can get melanomas actually on the palms and soles. I think Bob Marley died from that, right?
Oh, interesting.
So it's sort of an unusual exception. But the common type of skin cancer, the basal cell and squamous cell skin cancers, are almost never seen in people with dark skin.
So to her, so Jean's trick question, mm-hmm. the answer is neither.
Yeah,
right.
I would say you do be cautious. The other problem, people who do indoor tanning, they're exposing their entire body, areas that are not normally exposed to skin, to light. And we do know that there's a lot of studies that show that women who, I guess mostly for women, but men as well, who have exposure to indoor tanning at a young age have a higher incidence of melanoma. And that's a very dangerous thing. And even a short amount of tanning can be detrimental.
That's right. I know that's true.
I
know the kids on Fire Island were always big baseball players, but the Chartier twins were not. So they sat and read the Hardy Boys, and they're not getting it. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Jean. Good question. All right.
Thank you.
I want to ask you about the folliculitis. Can you catch that from another person?
If it's staff, you can. Staff is communicable. Like if you use a towel or rubbing, yeah. Staff in general, which causes impetigo, is communicable.
Yeah. Can you get it from a lover?
Of course.
Oh, well, no, I'm just trying to ask the questions of what to watch out for, that's all. Okay. Let's go to Allie in Poughkeepsie. Allie in Poughkeepsie, your turn.
Hi. Thank you both for being there. It's very nice to have your questions answered in person and not by recording.
Right.
Me.
My question is about tannic acid in tea. When I was a teenager, I decided to go to the beach twice, and probably, I don't know, there was a 6, 8, 10 month interval between the two times I went. And the last time I went, I had to go to the hospital, and a nurse told me to put tea bags in hot water in your bathtub and then cool it down. And when you soak in it, it pulls the burning out of the sunburn, and it really works.
Yeah, I heard that. Doing compresses with tea bags is sort of an old home remedy. I'm not sure if you diluted it in a bath, it would do much. But
I was really burned. I was burned everywhere.
Yeah, it's certainly safe if somebody wanted to try it. I have no qualms with that. But yeah, using tea bags as a compress for small burns is a sort of an old home remedy.
Leading to a certain question, if you have a really severe sunburn, as Lisa did, I don't want to freak you out here, Lisa, but can you get cancer from one burn?
Well, there's no way to really know. Every time you get a sunburn, it probably increases your risk for skin cancer, but you can't point the finger at that one sunburn and say, you know, this is what caused the melanoma. Mm-hmm. There are risks of chronic sun exposure, you know, someone who's, say, a farmer who's out there. But probably the intermittent sunburn is even more of a concern. A lot of the weekend warriors, people who will take a couple weeks a year out in the Caribbean, get a lot of sun exposure, probably end up getting a lot more damage because their skin is not accommodated to the sun. People who are outdoors a lot, their skin, you know, it kind of thickens. There is protection, obviously, from tanning, but there's also other mechanisms of skin protection. People who are out, whether it's thickening of the outer layer of the skin, but it seems to give some protection. So sunburns can be quite devastating later on. But, you know, having one or two as a kid, it's hard to say. It's certainly a risk factor later in life. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm almost 70, and people think I'm about 50 because I really don't like the sun, and I love hats.
Right, and remember all those people who walked around with the, you know, long white dresses on, and
the old, you know, the Victorian era was a dermatologist's dream.
Yeah,
sure, you had the parasol, and people were covered up. And again, that was certainly that changed when the 50s, 60s, people started the Capitone generation. People are out there getting sun, and it probably was at its worst in the 60s and 70s.
Don't forget the baby oil and the iodine.
Yeah. Well, people probably don't remember where the first effect of sunscreens weren't until the early 70s. The PABA was, you know, you probably remember that PABA, which turned out to be not a great chemical because it caused a lot of contact dermatitis and other problems. But it was the first effective chemical sunblock, and that wasn't until the early 70s. So people had to cover up if they wanted to protect themselves.
But you don't see a lot of people walking around with parasols. There was this lady on Fire Island who defied convention. She walked around with a parasol all the time, and people made fun of her. Turns out she knew what she was doing.
She was smart.
Hey, Allie, thank you. Okay, 1-800-348-255. I could name her, but I thought I'd think I'd get sued. 1-800-348-2551. And we go to Lisa in Saugerties. Okay, Lisa, your turn.
Hi there. Several years ago, I went to an orthopedist for a tennis elbow, and he noticed a big lump on the palm of my hand. And he said, well, you can thank your Nordic ancestors for that. He said it's hereditary. I guess in the olden days, they took care of it by slamming it with the Holy Bible because they were considered evil or something. And I think he may have called it a carbuncle. But now I have another one on the top of my hand and another one on the bottom of my foot. And the one on my hand is pulling on my tendons. Is this something I should be worried about? Should I have them removed? Are they going to get worse?
Okay. Once again, I can't make a definitive diagnosis, but the Bible cyst cure thing, that's a ganglion cyst. Typically, people would get on the wrist, and the old home cure was to smack
right.
it with the...
I wasn't that, about to yeah. do that, trust me.
Those ganglions, they're related to what we talked about earlier. The digital mucus cyst is basically a similar thing. It's not a true cyst, but it's outpouching from the tendon as you get that collection of the mucin. One other thing which you may be describing, it's something interesting for listeners, is something called Dupuytren's contracture. And that's pretty common, where you get it typically on the fourth and fifth fingers, and it really is an orthopedic problem, although we see it in dermatology because it does affect the skin. It's a disorder which you get a contracture around the tendon sheath, and it pulls in, and in severe cases, you can't straighten out your fingers. A related condition is trigger finger, because it kind of releases. I think it's related. If there's any orthopedists out there, they can correct me. That is pretty common, and you want to treat that early because the more scarring you get, essentially, is scarring, the harder it is to fix. And I know there's some new treatments now where there are some injections to sort of dissolve the fibrotic tissue there and release it without having to have surgery. But you want to see an orthopedist, specifically someone who does work with hands.
And that's for what Dupuytren's?
The one on my foot is actually kind of painful because it's on a point where my foot rests in my shoe. So
yeah, again, feet, it could be a lot of things on your feet, so you want to see an orthopedist or a podiatrist who you trust. And yeah.
Okay. Listen, Lisa, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Right. Bye.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Right. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to go real fast to Sandy, Doc, and we'll see whether we can wrap this one up because we have to be out in just a few minutes here, and we'll come back after that, of course. Okay, Sandy in... Whoa.
That was fast.
Oh, no, that turned out not to be right. Okay, so let's now go to Sandy in Warwick. Okay, Sandy, you're on, theoretically.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm 30 weeks pregnant, and I just discovered some stretch marks on my belly. And as excited I am for the baby, this is a little bit of a bummer because I really don't know what to do afterwards. I've been reading online that there's not really a way to treat them. So I'm looking for some recommendations.
Well, congratulations on being pregnant. And
Thank you.
I'm sure you're excited about having the baby.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, stretch marks don't occur in everybody, but some women do get them, as you know. And there's not much you can do about it now. And in fact, there's probably not a whole lot you can do about it later. I think some women do really well in that they heal up quite nicely. You obviously want to make sure that you're working with your GYN, keeping your weight, you know, keeping at your ideal weight. Because if you put on more pounds than needed, it certainly can exacerbate the problem. But there are some treatments afterwards. And again, after you have the baby and if you're breastfeeding, you certainly want to be careful about anything you may be even putting on your skin because things do get absorbed. So you want to talk to your doctor about that. For now, I would just do your best to just keep the skin healthy, moisturize, and a lot of that may resolve on its own, and I have to deal with it, postpartum and see how things look. But stretch marks are a problem. Right. We don't really know what causes them, why certain people get them. You could certainly see them with rapid fluctuations in weight. Whether it be pregnancy or just gaining weight, right. Sometimes you'll see them in teenagers when they all of a sudden grow and have growth spurts. They can be quite a problem cosmetically.
Well, isn't the case of pregnancy? Isn't it a badge of honor?
Yes, it is.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yes, they're calling them tiger stripes now.
Thank you, Sandy. Appreciate it. We're going to take a brief break, and in a couple of seconds, we'll be right back. And we are back with dermatologist Dr. Joseph Schwartz, and he's doing a terrific job, as I'm sure you all have heard. By interweb, as Ray Graff always tells me, interweb. He says, here's somebody from H sent this in. It was, I'm experimenting with cannabis to alleviate atopic dermatitis. My doctor encouraged me to try to figure out what works. Any suggestions?
Well, I don't have a lot of information about cannabis and atopic per se. There are lots of treatments for atopic dermatitis, although it is still an extremely difficult condition to control. Atopic dermatitis is a little bit under the radar compared to a condition like psoriasis, which everybody knows about. But atopic dermatitis runs in the family. People get extreme pruritus or itching, and it's often associated with other diseases such as asthma and allergies. The hallmark of the disease really is a lot of itching. When people get it on their neck, face, arms, back of their legs. Mm. There are some new treatments for it. There is a new biologic treatment, which is an injection, which can be very helpful for people. That sort of was a breakthrough. It was the first really FDA-approved systemic therapy for atopic dermatitis. It's helped a lot of people.
Okay. Let's try to clean up some of what we got waiting for us, Doc. Okay. Let's go to Lisa in Albany. Lisa in Albany, your turn.
Hi. How are you?
We're good. Go.
Couple quick questions. One, I had a dermatologist tell me, because I'm in my 40s, and I had acne, and told me it was a dairy allergy, that a lot of women in the beard area that get acne, it's dairy. It's cheeses and ice cream and milk. I wanted to ask that. And I'm also a cancer survivor. And I have olive skin. I've never had sunburn issue until after chemo.
Okay. As far as dairy goes, so a lot of people try to associate foods with acne. Acne is really common. But two things that can exacerbate it are One of them is dairy. The other is probably sugary foods. So it's not really an allergy, but there may be some hormones in the dairy, natural hormones or maybe not natural, depending on the source of the dairy, which can actually make the acne worse. So it's not an allergy, but it can be a exacerbating factor. So it might be worth trying to avoid dairy and see how your acne is. It may have nothing to do with it at all. It's certainly not the most likely cause. As far as chemo and your skin, it is possible you can get sensitive. If it's been a while since you were treated, your skin is otherwise healthy, you probably should be more or less as you were. But I would have to know exactly what medicine you received and really look into whether there was any kind of a reported long-term effects on the skin like that. But it wouldn't be common.
Yeah, it's been 2 years, and I've never in my life, like I said, olive skin person, didn't really burn ever. Yeah, since 2 years, I've burned like twice now because I just go out and I'm like, holy cow, I'm so much more sensitive.
Well, until it gets sorted out, definitely be cautious. You know, use sunscreen, wear a hat, and I would talk to your oncologist about it. Go through exactly what chemo medications you're on and see whether that's an effect that we can attribute to that.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, let's go now to Eric in Chatham. Eric in Chatham, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have these episodes every few months where I get this horrible itching in my forearms, and I can't get any relief for it other than to dip my whole arm and elbow into the like a bucket of ice water, and then I'll have that issue for a few hours, and then it'll go away and reappear seemingly out of nowhere a few months later. And I don't know what causes it, and just wanted to see if there's any. You mentioned atopic dermatitis earlier. Maybe that's something like this type of thing I'm experiencing. Or
do you have a rash on your arms? Do you have a?
No, there's no visible rash.
So what you describe, it's pretty common, actually. It's called brachioradial pruritus. It's actually an itch coming from inside, not outside. It has to do with the brachioradial nerve, which comes out of your neck, down through your shoulder and down to your arm. And if the nerve is inflamed or irritated, it can actually give the symptom of itching. Sort of like you get sciatica, which is inflamed nerves, and it can affect your the pain down your buttocks or legs. With this condition, it causes itching. And it's often associated with people who do have arthritis in the neck. And it can be intermittent, like you described. So one thing to think about is whether you do have any disease of the cervical spine, and maybe something can be done to help the itching. But it is more of a nuisance than anything, and it often is intermittent and often does go away over time.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, now let's go to Joseph in Schuylerville. Joseph in Schuylerville, your turn.
Hi. I have a itchy area on my upper back. I've had it for several weeks. I don't notice any rash or anything like that. I'm wondering if it possibly could be related to going in a steam room and or a hot tub.
Again,
based on, heat or bacteria, whatever.
Do you have a rash or any kind of marks on the skin? Okay. Everybody's itchy. Now, this is what I deal with all day long. And it's really common, pruritus or itching. It's when you think about with dermatology, I mean, it's one of the most common, if not the most common, symptom. So it's a common thread for my day is to people to be itchy. But another neuropathic itch can occur on the back. It's called notalgia paresthetica, where, again, it's an irritated, probably intercostal nerve. And it tends to cause an itch, a very irritating sensation at the scapula area, so sort of at the point of the scapula, usually one side. And people who have it for a long time, the skin actually does eventually get discolored from rubbing. You get changes. Uh-huh. And so, again, when you have itching, there's a few. First of all, itch is very complicated, and we don't have a real treatment. We don't have a medicine just treating itch. Antihistamines kind of sedate you, but don't really get to the problem. We're getting a better understanding of which cytokines or proteins in the body may be causing the itching, but we still don't have a real good medicine for it. But the approach is trying to figure out what's causing it. The most common thing really is from the outside, where you have where a dermatitis like eczema or psoriasis can cause an itch. But you can also get it from inside out, like we've mentioned these two cases, these areas where there's nerve involvement. And it can also be a systemic manifestation of things like lymphoma. So people who develop out of the blue severe generalized pruritus, it can be a symptom of something actually quite serious.
Pruritus means itching?
Pruritus is itching, correct, yeah. So, itch is a very complex area where there is research, but it's really important to try to figure out where it is coming from.
Now you got me itching. Thank you, Joseph. Okay, all right. 1-800-348-2551. We're getting down to the very nub of this thing, so we'll go to Marta in Cooperstown. Marta, you're on.
Hi, guys. I'm calling about a commercial I've started seeing in the last few weeks, which purports to show really dramatic sun damage in people's skin and upper bodies, which is not visible to the naked eye. There's these black and white pictures with all these, oh, look at all that. Ooh, that looks scary. Is this a real diagnostic tool, or is this just sort of advertising hocus pocus?
I'm not sure where you saw that, but if you use a blue light, you know what that is? You know, the blue light that they used to show, like posters would glow.
Right.
If you use a blue light, it will reveal a lot of brown spots that may not be visible to the naked eye, and it can be quite impressive. So it can show basically sun damage. So that might be what you saw. It's kind of a gimmick, but it can reinforce the fact that those areas of sun exposure do have changes. And again, those may be that easily seen. I know with myself, I'm very fair, and if I'm in the sun a lot, even with sunscreen, my freckles will get a little darker. But in the winter, if you shine the blue light, you can really see these lentigos or freckles on my hands or face.
Where do you get a blue light?
Well, I'm glad there's a home version.
So we use a blue light. We use it in the office. To try to diagnose different disorders of pigmentation on the skin. People who have vitiligo, which is a disease where you lose pigment, will actually show no pigment in the skin, no melanin, and it looks very bony white when you use the blue light, which is why we'd use this. And if you do have just hypopigmentation or just lack of diminished pigmentation, the blue light will bring it out, so you can differentiate between vitiligo and other types of pigmentation.
Okay.
Now, is this the same kind of light that you would use to see if a dollar bill, if currency is authentic?
I think they do use that type of light. Again, I don't think it's something that you would just buy in the store.
But it is a tool that you have, for example, in your office. It is a technique that
you use. Yes, it's called a woods light. That's a woods lamp is the technical term for it.
Woods like forests?
Yes.
Okay, Carter, I've got to let you go. Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll go to Mark in Deerfield. We're running out of time here, but let's get him in.
We'll have to talk fast.
Okay, Mark.
Hi, doctors. Thank you for taking my call. I've had a reoccurring spot on my thigh, calf, of it itches, and I put hydrocortisone on it, and it goes away, comes back in a few days. It's just back and forth. It never 100% goes away. It'll get very crusty and almost like scab-like, but not a physical scab, just very, very crusty. And I'm trying to find a way to just make it go away 100%.
It's hard to diagnose through this,
of course,
the phone.
Yeah, but is there
well, the
a
theme,
treatment
the,
more a stronger than
well, well, what I would I say is... Yeah.
Whoa, Mark, let him talk.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, the theme of the program is really itching. In general, a skin cancer is often not symptomatic. So you'll hear things mm-hmm. like, oh, it's not bothering me, so it can't be skin cancer. Or you'll hear, oh, it's itchy, so it is. It's not consistent. In general, sometimes skin cancers can be symptomatic, even though it's not typically the case. So something that's itchy, you still have to be concerned that it is a lesion that may need to be removed. But again, the absence of itching doesn't mean it's okay.
Serious?
No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the fact that
okay.
in general, any time you have a lesion on the skin that does not heal, you should assume it shouldn't be there and probably have it checked.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Okay, we have some time here. I want to ask you very quickly, PI, poison ivy, obviously, you see a lot of it in your practice. Big this year?
I've seen a few cases. It's big every summer. People have to be careful to really avoid it and, you know, look out for those leaves of three. Mm-hmm. People who are allergic, some people who are severely allergic just get near it seem to have a problem. If you think you're exposed, you want to wash the skin area right away because you can...
With what?
Soap and water. Soap and water is fine. Again, people who are super allergic, probably even the shortest contact is going to cause a problem. But most part, if you can wash it off quickly, you'll be fine. If you're hiking, even in a stream without soap, if you rinse it off, you can help. People who have bad poison ivy, it's an awful thing. It's here we go again with the itch. It's one of the most itchy conditions. And they would require usually a course of oral prednisone because it's so, so bad. Wow. It's blistery and itchy.
Wow. Okay. And then we heard from, let's see here, Anne, who said, I went to a dermatologist last year for a routine skin check. I'm 61. He told me I did not need to come back because, one, I had no visible sun damage. Two, my coloring is such that I would be able to tell if something appeared and could come back then. And three, due to my eye and hair coloring, the lack of freckles, I was a low risk. I've already had a diagnosis of mucosal melanoma. And when I told my oncologist at MSK is...
Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer
right.
Center.
He said he. I was just testing you. He said he had never heard of a dermatologist telling anyone they did not need a routine skin check.
So, anyone who's had a skin cancer should be checked. So, in that case, that individual should be followed regularly. If anybody's had mucosal, even an ocular melanoma, they probably have a risk factor. There's probably genetic risk factors to develop cutaneous melanoma. That being said, not everybody needs to be checked every year. If there's no family history, if someone has dark skin, they don't have moles, there's probably very low yield in terms of finding things, doing a routine screen. And it would be nice if during people's routine physical exams, you know, their general practitioner took a look at the skin. But it's probably very impractical to expect that everybody, 100% of the population can or should be checked. We need to really focus on those people who are higher risk, who have a history of family history or personal history of skin cancer, who are more fair and it certainly have those, you know, high percentages of getting skin cancer. But anyone who's had a skin cancer definitely should be seen at least once a year.
Okay, so I do want to apologize to Ramona, who we left on the line. Everyone else who called in, we appreciate all your calling. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Tricor Anesthesia Group, accepting applications for CRNAs to provide anesthesia services for the Capital Region. 518-598-2042 for details. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop Medical Monday. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for the Media Project.